Run Them Jewels Fast, Ray.
I'm glad you know that song.
All right, this is The Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside Ray Brewer. That was Run the Jewels, getting us pumped up for a big episode here. A day later than normal, partially by design, although we still do not have the official word from the university. We can confidently tell you today the same thing that we've been confidently telling you for, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, whatever it's been. Tony Sanchez is going to be the football coach at UNLV, making the move up from Bishop Gorman High. Obviously, it's not going to be in writing in his contract, but it is all of our understanding that this move is made in part with significant financial contributions, whether that be directly from Lorenzo Fertitta or other Gorman supporters or just other supporters in the community. UNLV is going this route, A, because it has very little to lose other than a bunch more games, which it does anyway. And potentially the financial boon could help build something here that's more than just kind of the bottom of the barrel in the Mountain West. Ray Brewer, coming from your main side, high school football, and the team that has put Nevada football to the degree that it's on the map, it's because of Bishop Gorman. Your thoughts on the move, the decision from both sides, just kind of what's your feeling on this whole situation?
Well, I'm a big Tony Sanchez guy. I think he's a tremendous coach. Will it translate at the next level? We'll obviously find out. He is very intense, very enthusiastic, super detailed, very structured, and he's a great game planner, and it works good on the high school level.
You've done a story where you like kind of follow him the day before the game or the
very
day
impressive.
Of the game, right?
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, it's obviously not going to be exactly the same game day experience or prepping for, but kind of what are some of the details that you gleaned from that?
Yeah. And I think a lot of what he learned for game days, he took from when he was at New Mexico, but for the state tournament, they get up there a day early on Thursday. They have a walkthrough at the stadium. They have film sessions at the hotel. They have team meals. He plans every activity out to the minute so the kids know what's expected of them all the way up until kickoff when he expects them to perform. And there's no doubt the guy's the captain of the ship. The beginning of the story, the flight they were going to take got canceled, and he had to hustle to get everybody on the earlier flight on Southwest, you know how they stack the flights,
yeah.
And to just see him take control of basically the whole airport. Now, granted, he had a lot of resources to make that happen, and I was like, man, this guy's got – so I never knew that high school people would watch film like this with, different units of the team in different meetings, and just the precision and practice, and, his average Tuesday afternoon speech would be the best you've heard. And
you love him as a speech giver, right?
As
being just kind of the that voice, given that Newt Rockne
yeah.
type of thing.
He's got that gift where if he's speaking in front of veterans at the Air Force Base or a coaching clinic, which he does frequently, he could rally up a room. Now, he's very intense, Taylor. He'll get in your face for a. Like Blake Decker would have been yelled at 40 times this past year on the first quarter of the first game.
And that's not to say that he was not yelled at by the UNLV staff.
Yeah, but Tony's probably a little more in your face. But at the same time, he's going to love you up. It's just I don't know with the 19- to 23-year-old athlete if they would take it as well as 14- to 17. So
yeah.
It's kind of a different skill set that he's going to have to adjust to. But – You see college coaches coming from the high school ranks frequently, but they never make the jump from the head chair
to
the head chair. With that said, UNLV is one of the worst teams in the nation. There's a lot that Gorman had that UNLV didn't. They played on ESPN more. They had more national media coverage. Their facilities were obviously better. He can't control that. I mean, UNLV couldn't control that initially. So I think this guy has been faced with a lot of the responsibilities he's going to inherit at UNLV.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously skeptical about whether the, the rah-rah, all of the – you talk about having everything planned down to the minute. And, I've seen game day schedules or, kind of things like that. I think that's – it sounds like he's run it like a college program already, But it's not like UNLV or certain, you know, programs that struggle necessarily weren't doing those things. It's that when it looks much better when you're winning, and then everything else that you did before that kind of has a gleam of genius or smarter of you figured it out. And part of it is, let's just admit it, for especially in local areas, I mean, they just have way more talent than everybody else.
Yeah. And in high school as well, he's one of the only guys doing this detailed preparation, and that gives him a distinct advantage because other schools aren't doing that. But there was a lot of things with the UNLV program that he could change, taking a bus ride to Provo or to San Diego, leaving on a Friday for a Saturday game at Hawaii. All that stuff he won't agree to.
Well, for the Hawaii thing specifically, they changed that this year. Like, they had been going out earlier and felt like it wasn't helping, and so they tried to switch it up. I mean, I'm intrigued by it. I don't see it as a bad decision as long as money comes, because he's not going to do any worse record-wise. Yeah. I do not believe pretty much anybody with any type of competence can be thrown into that position and win 15 games over 5 years. You just can't. I mean, that is such a low bar to clear. And so if he puts a staff around him, which I think is really kind of one of the biggest keys here, you got to get college experience and specifically, you know, some recruiting guys that are outside of maybe your base. Onto that staff, especially, you know, going to California. So what's Tony before he comes to Gorman? What was he doing?
He was a coach at Cal High in Northern California. The program was a perennial loser. He came in, changed the culture right away, and he basically said, we want to beat De La Salle. And he scheduled them every year, and he came within points of beating them the last try. So he turned that team from a perennial loser into a perennial winner, and then he came and he got the Gorman gig.
Okay. And he's been there six years. Okay.
85-5, six state championships, mythical national title this year. The first spring practice I covered when he was at Gorman, and I looked at the photo gallery the other day, and it was just, you saw how tiny all the players are in comparison to how they've put on the weights now. But Gorman had a player, Taylor, committed to Stanford. Dad had played in the NFL, and the dad was on the previous coaching staff. Kid showed up like 5 minutes late to the first spring workout. Tony went over, got in his face, yelled at him, said, if you do it again, no need to come back. And when I was interviewing afterwards, I was like, hey, bro, you kind of realize that kid's going to Stanford. That's so-and-so's kid. He's like, I don't care whose kid it is. And then this past summer, we had our media gathering here. We bring in all the kids, and Nico Fertitta showed up 15 minutes late. And I'm thinking, all right, well, Nico Fertitta, no big deal, right? Tony tore into that kid like he'd never been torn into before. And I think that those two situations showed me, you know, this guy he's got it. He's got something special, and I've known that. The one thing, like, I keep going back to is, how's it going to relay over to college? I would think he's smart enough to know to go out and to get some proven, experienced guys to help him. But I know
the staff is key.
Yeah. The guy briefly sold Xerox machines for like 6 months in between coaching jobs. And he wanted to be a coach all along, but he had a young family and he needed to make some money. So he said, well, what I did is I found the best sales job, went out there, sold a $100,000 contract, got enough commission to get back into coaching. So, I mean, that tells me, and I think he's smart enough where Bobby's recruiting style was like, he wanted to find the diamond in the rough, the kid under the radar that nobody wanted, and he would try to recruit him. And I think Tony is going to try to just go get some guys that everybody likes, and he's going to – it's like
– and see if he can sell a couple of them.
Yeah, it's like when you go out to the disco or wherever, the club or the bar.
I love that you still call it going out at night, going to the disco.
You're on the prowl, and you see five girls, and you say, okay, well, I'm going to focus in on girl A. Well, Tony, I think, is going to talk to all five girls, hoping to get one of them to go on the dance floor with him.
Yeah.
Which is – it's the key to life. You just got to ask as many times as you can.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an interesting situation. I know some people hate it. I just don't see what a Jim Fossil or a June Jones or, you know, some of those guys with clearly more proven coaching records. Jim Fossil, obviously, was in the NFL, a local here. June Jones with ties. support from the Maloof family. You know, if that were to come with the same financial contribution, then I think we're having a conversation. But I also like the idea of, let's just see. Look, Tony's been a name thrown around about this for at least 2 years, and a lot of times it was just kind of laughed off by me included. It is interesting. I mean, it's just to see. UNLV, you can afford to experiment, because guess what? You're not getting a stadium soon enough for it to matter for, you know, kind of any near expansion. Your schedule is brutal, so no matter who you bring in, they're going to lose. So why not just see if by year three you've got something rolling and you've got something built on campus and you're not arguably the worst team in the league?
Yeah, and they think what they did at Gorman they could duplicate in the Mountain West. And I'm thinking
– What do you mean as far as that? Because they're not building that into a perennial Mountain West power.
Well, I think they think, though, that they could win some games and have a winning record every year. And you look at the Mountain West, and it's comparable to crappy Nevada football.
Yeah.
There's a lot of winnable games on the schedule where if you just upgrade the talent a little bit and get the program out of the 1990s, Sanchez was giving me a story the other day about how he played college football at New Mexico State. His last game at New Mexico State was here at Sam Boyd Stadium against UNLV. Had like four catches that day. They won.
Was he a receiver?
A wide receiver, yeah. And he just remembered thinking back at the time, and this was – he graduated high school in 92. He's 40, so it was probably like 97, 98, right? Remember thinking just how crappy the lockers were. They were in the visiting locker room, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here it is, 2009, 11, 12 seasons later. He comes back to Sam Boyd Stadium with Gorman for the high school state football game, his first year at Gorman, walks into the same locker rooms, and they haven't changed one bit. And he was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And nevertheless, here we are, 2014, and they're trying to rally to raise money to get new turf on the field there. He got new turf put on Gorman's field. Now, granted, it came from the same family twice in his 6 years.
And that's a big difference. You know, he's had – sort of the direct pipeline there. And
an open checkbook of sorts.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously the Fertitta family. How many sons have gone through the program?
Three total boys.
Okay.
One of – well, two of Lorenzo's, Lorenzo Jr. and Nico, and then Frank, the third is Frank Jr.'s son.
Okay. And so obviously have direct connections to Gorman, and so, you know, big question has been, well, why would they back the guy at UNLV then if they don't have any of – the kids playing. I've heard, you know, some people have suggested that maybe Nico would transfer, those type of things. I don't know.
Lorenzo
that
from Villanova to Vegas.
Yeah. I don't know
which
if
could
that's
make sense
in
this
scenario. I mean, yeah, because Villanova's not like a big thing. So maybe there's that. But I think that they, Lorenzo specifically, I think he wants to build a winner. I think he wants to be the guy that helps get UNLV going to where. And look, I don't buy any grand ideas that they're going to be, you know, suddenly Boise State or anything like that. Just be average.
Mm-hmm.
If you can be the person that makes UNLV average, they'll build a statue for you.
Exactly.
That's all you need to be for UNLV football.
You go 7-5, we put you in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Seriously.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a joke.
Last year's team, the 2013 team, is going to end up in the UNLV Hall of Fame. You know it.
No doubt about it. And the bar is just so low here, and I don't see Tony being a loser, though. I can't picture a guy.
Well, I mean,
I've covered a
lot of guys who have been winners before they got to UNLV have come to UNLV and have lost.
I know.
You know, it happens. But I agree with you. I don't think he's going to be worse. He has the potential to be significantly better with the financial support, with the right type of staff where he can be kind of a CEO at the top and get some good college guys in there, good recruiting bases in there. Can he, and I think we might have brought this up on the last podcast too, or just you and I have talked about it. What do you think about him recruiting Vegas other than Gorman? Because I feel like obviously UNLV ought to be getting some more Gorman players as a result of this. We're not talking about Alize Jones or, you know, the top guys. Like that's not the scenario. Maybe one for whatever reason decides to, but most likely not. You're talking about the second tier, just filling it out more.
The Mark Phillippes.
Yeah. You know, you're getting better talent there than most of your other schools here, and most of the good talent that you get from a place like, you know, Basic with Devontae is that academic problems. That's the only reason he ended up at UNLV. But what do you think about Tony going to Basic, Durango, going to Liberty, going, I mean, can he go and recruit at these schools?
And that's the thing. I initially thought that there'd be so much animosity toward Tony from the high school coaches who he's destroyed, hasn't lost to a local team in 6 years, that they wouldn't be receptive to it. But a lot of these guys went to UNLV and they think it's great because of the resources he brings. I've talked to, I think, three coaches in the last 2 days, and they think it's great and they're looking forward to it. And I know Bobby only did a passing camp at UNLV, and I know that Tony would probably like to do a tackle camp where he could see some kids in pads and save the school's money because they travel up to Utah, which is a huge cost to go to camp. And right there you get a good look at all the kids. But, you know, he and I talked.
Do they right now have the ability to host, like, that many kids, kind of have that big a camp? Like, well, can they do that
Sanford
at Rebel Park?
Well, Sanford used to do it at Rebel Park.
Okay, so you've got those two fields. Yeah, like, that's kind of all you need.
You can make it work, and you can bring in, obviously, people from other regions, let them stay in the dorms. It's a great way to get a look at a lot of kids.
Yes. By the way, the official name is Rebel Ark. I've been there. There's no P.
Oh, is that why it's always on your mileage report?
Yes. It is only it's been Rebel Ark ever since I got here. I hope they never change it. If Tony
puts a P,
if I have one request, the only thing I want him to leave the same. You can update all the stuff. Don't you dare put a P on there. I love Rebel Ark. But anyway, my side note.
And another example of how just it's broke over there, and I just can't figure out why UNLV has waited so long to try to attack this problem. You know, it's like driving around with your check engine light on for 10 years. And
I do that. I definitely am guilty of that one. But no, I understand your point. Part of it, I think, is just being able to get the commitment from your boosters, from your, you know, families who actually have interest in seeing UNLV football do well.
And that's the thing, because
basically hand it over to them.
Yeah, and because UNLV football never does well, and because they average, whatever, 12,000 fans a year, and their season ticket totals are less than 1,000 a year, nobody's willing to kind of step up and say, hey, I'll be the face of this, or let me rally 8 or 9 families together and we'll get you $1 million each. They're just like, well, win or show some enthusiasm or show that you're on an upward trend and maybe we'll help you out. And I really think Tony has got this personality where, you know, one minute he could be the guy in coach pants on the field directing traffic, and the next minute he could be in a suit talking to alumni and boosters and making them feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's a no-risk thing for UNLV. The one thing is, you know, the skeptics are, why hire a high school coach? He's going to fail on his face. Why not get Fossil or Jones? Well, June Jones had the worst team in America at SMU this year.
And he quit it.
And he recruited all those kids.
Yeah.
He didn't inherit those. Fossil is 65. He's not the answer. It'd be a retirement check for him. Here's a young guy, likes Nevada, is a proven winner, granted at a lower level, and he brings the ability to fundraise. What do you got to lose?
We'll see. I'm definitely intrigued by it, and we'll have more on LasVegasSun.com as this becomes official. I'm guessing today's Tuesday. The presser has to be Wednesday or Thursday whenever UNLV decides to just
stop playing with us.
Just say it. We all know it. It's been done. You know, whatever negotiations there were to have left, we're done over the weekend. Like, this has been done.
A player to be named later in a baseball trade, as you put it to me last night.
Yes, indeed. And I guess we haven't talked since that debacle at Arizona State, where UNLV went into halftime. First was up 15 right off the bat, went into halftime tied, and then ended up losing by 22. Came back and played St. Catherine at Orleans Arena Friday night, won by 60, because St. Catherine would have – I mean, they'd beat my rec league intramural team, but we could hang for a little while. And so that's kind of gives you an idea of the talent level. I'm going to be fascinated by this. St. Catherine plays San Jose State tonight. That could be a game.
Exactly. I can't believe San Jose State is that bad.
I love betting against them. Oh, man, so profitable. Anyway, so just another disastrous performance out of UNLV. Did not play defense. Rashad Vaughn went out with an injury in the second half. Jalon Kendrick was hurt coming into the game. I mean, that was – he was hurt.
Oh, was he?
Rashad?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he was – because it was non-contact after making a shot. For those who are not in the room, Ray put that in quotes as I kept talking. He was definitely hurt. And it was just back spasms. Yeah. It looked like it just locked up on him. But he went from midair, making a shot, no contact, and then just immediately went down with his back. But I don't – also, here's another thing. The exit that he made that was the lead of some other person's story, I did not believe. I believe that was a little bit of a performance put on by a certain member of the staff, but that's neither here nor there. UNLV not looking good. Multiple 20-point losses to Pac-12 teams. It was 22 to Arizona State, 29 to Stanford. Yes, they're young enough that you have to assume – you have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to get better, but better in areas that, man, it you can make improvements. How do you not? I don't care what age you are. How do you not just stay on your man or know where he's at? They were constantly getting lost on defense, and I put a lot of that on the coaching staff for playing man pretty much the entire game. This team sucks at man. They're bad at it,
and they've had success in the zone. The whole Temple game was the product of the zone, and even when they rallied to beat, was it Moorhead the first night? It was because of the zone. And listen, I feel you on the defense, but for me, that's not the big red flag. To me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but every possession, does it seem like they're trying to shoot a three-pointer?
That's what happened after they got off to that great start, and that's what
banks one in, and you think that
that's what they fall into. But they've had – it's been overall, I would say, better ball movement, better working into sets than the majority of kind of what we think of for the past couple of years. But they're definitely falling into those same habits, no doubt. To me, they're not a good offensive team. They're probably not going to be other than spurts. To me, the concern is defense because you can look at San Diego State, and they had just an awful performance at Washington the other night, scored – like their lowest in Division I history in the last 45 years. But they've also had performances like that two or three times so far this year and have won because their defense is so locked in and so good. You have to make up for that deficiency, and I think it's easier to do that by buying in on the defensive end and making that your consistency and then hoping that you can figure it out on offense and that that's going to progress, those type of things, because the players are always going to want to play better on offense. Not every young kid desires to be a better defender. But that's the more important part. That's what you have to get them to buy in, to have that be your standard. And then teaching offense later is easy because everybody wants to be a great offensive player, wants to score points, blah, blah, blah. So it's these early games that, and before the season and all this, this is where you need your defense to get better because you have – four really hard games coming up in basically a two-week stretch starting December 20th with Utah at MGM.
Road game.
Arizona. Yeah, it is going to be. That's the other thing. Las Vegas. But get your tickets now. We've been getting emails about it from a certain friend of the show who's really pumping this up, and he's got good reason to. Utah plays in the Las Vegas Bowl at 12:30, and that game will not tip off. UNLV Utah is the second half of a doubleheader behind Oklahoma and Washington. That game will tip off till 8:30 or 9. They got plenty of time to get over. Utah fans are going to descend on the city, and it is going to be a road game. So you got December 20th at MGM, December 23rd Arizona at home, December 31st at Wyoming, and then January 4th at Kansas. That is a brutal stretch. And you're just – they're going to have to be significantly better than what we've seen.
They're going to be 0-4 after that in that stretch.
In that stretch? I don't
they are. And they're not going to win at Wyoming.
I think they can win at least one of those.
Are you – I think I know what you're thinking. You think they got a chance to shock Arizona? Yes!
I don't know. I'm not sold on Wyoming either. They look really good at home, and that's obviously where the game's at. December 31st, all that. But their competition so far, look, I like them. I think they're further along than I thought they would be at this stage. But half of their schedule so far has been teams that aren't even on the betting board. Like, they just haven't faced much. And the one game that they did, SMU closed on like a 23-9 run and ended up blowing them out.
You had Wyoming that day in your picks.
Yes, I'm aware of what I had, Roy.
I had SMU in real life. I had buyer's remorse when I saw your pick, and then I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that end finish. But it's – look, to win any of those games, they have to play a better game than we've seen them to this date. Their best overall performance so far is Albany, and that's fine. You got a 16-point win there, but Albany is not Utah, is not Arizona, is not Wyoming, and they sure ain't Kansas.
You say that because you went to Kansas.
I know. Yes. Arizona has proven the most out of the teams I listed thus far. But
that game is.
I was doing it in order.
That game is going to kill me because you and Case went to Kansas. John Taylor in the office went to Kansas.
Don't like cheer for Kansas basketball. I prefer they win.
I know, but when it comes to an argument with me to be on the winning side,
yeah,
you're going to be like, I'm sure Kelly Oubre will play for the first time this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, exactly. That kid has had a rough start there, a Finley Prep product. But yeah, football, obviously the biggest news here. Tony Sanchez, as we said, I would expect the press conference Wednesday or Thursday this week. Keep your eye out on Twitter. I'm at Taylor Byrne, B-E-R-N, at Ray Brewer 21.
B-R-E-W-E-R.
Everybody knows how to spell Brewer. Okay. He's the Brew Crew, Rayleigh, the banana peel, tomato can brewer. He goes by many names, known all around town. Yeah. For Ray, I am Taylor, and we will talk to you guys next week.